James Ellsworth, you've done it again here on the Dougcast. You've reached out, brought on someone a lot bigger than me. It's nice that you get to finally share your podcast with someone who has in-ring experience other than the nerdy old me, James.
Yeah, absolutely. We got the big guy Ryback on the line. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today? Thank you for having me.
We're doing good. I'm a big fan. I love the conversation with the big guy on iTunes. You can find it there. I want to jump in. We have a limited time with you, and I just want to ask, and it intrigues me when a wrestler goes from entertainer to media or podcaster. What was your view on the podcast industry as a wrestler compared to now that you're knee deep in the podcast game?
For me, it had nothing to do with wrestling, so to speak. It was more everything with me and my business and in the different books that I'd come across. Everything recommended that other successful people were doing it. One of the things, the common trend was podcasting. And it's a great platform for when you have a business, but it's also a great platform to allow people to know your real personality and many different facets. And for me, that was one of the things I wanted to really do was get people to know who I really was based on what I wanted them to hear and not necessarily judge me from acting. Or playing different roles and whatnot in the wrestling world. So I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to audiobooks primarily, but there's a few that I listen to on business and whatnot. And then I used to listen to the Bruce Pritchard one occasionally if there was something I wanted to hear about. But I didn't listen to them all that much back when I was in WWE and when I left. And I still don't necessarily, but I just think it's a great platform. And there's so many, there's billions of people out there. So there's room for everyone, in my opinion.
James, what's your view on it? I don't know if we've even talked about this from you go back and forth with the WWE and now you're a podcaster. How's it feel for you?
Oh, man, I'm liking it. Like when you first asked me to do it, I was a little optimistic. I'm like, yeah, is that something I really want to get into? But I've been really enjoying it the last couple of months and look forward to continue on here on the Dougcast.
So, James, what kind of questions or how did you want to go about interviewing Ryback? Because I've got the nerdy side of the industry. You two are industry mates.
I try to ask different and unique questions, and I think I do have a unique question for Ryback. When they first started pushing you there on WWE, you were squashing a lot of enhancement talent, sometimes two guys at a time. And me, I came from being an enhancement talent. That's how I got, you know, my shot, and that's how I got over wrestling Braun Strowman. Is there any enhancement talent guys that kind of stick out to you that you may have worked with when they were doing that with you?
Everybody, I've gone back and on the different interviews and whatnot. I can't thank all the guys enough that I worked with on all that. And it was that went on for quite a stretch of time. I don't know if it felt like forever, but it was probably realistically in the 4 to 6 month range that, but it was twice a week, you know, on Raw and SmackDown and picking the local talents. And you know, Road Dogg played a part in helping me with that, as did a lot of the different agents, Arn Anderson, Michael Hayes at different times. And I just remember Road Dogg specifically, we would always just try to find the most athletic and guys that follow direction really well. And I would spend a lot of time with them during the day because it was at that point in time, it was you're under the radar, not with WWE necessarily, even though you probably are, but more so with the fans because you're trying to get over. And any little mistake or anything, it could set you back and really hinder that process. And I was thankful all those guys came through. They all did great. Everybody did everything asked of them, and they let me throw them around and made it look like a train wreck. And we kept people's interest in it, and it allowed me. That was again, I was playing a role, and those guys, they came through and they went to bat every week. And I thank all of them. There was no specific one guy. I just remember every week we tried to do something a little different and try to do something to wow the people. And then eventually we started you know, double stacking the guys. And that was a lot of pressure on me, but it was on the guys too. Those guys, because we'd walk through it and they didn't want to mess up. And when you're dealing with picking up multiple guys at once, it's timing is extremely important. And if one guy, you know, jumps before the other guy, it throws the whole thing off. And they would listen to my like cues on that. And it was just everybody, man. It was great. It was, and it helped allow me to get over to a certain level before ever even wrestling a WWE contracted talent. So I can't thank those guys enough.
And I don't think that's something that like doesn't get talked about a lot. It's like when you're an enhancement talent guy, like you're so nervous to get in there. Yep. And like what Ryback was saying, like, and you just hope you don't mess up. You hope you do a good job, because if you mess up, yeah, they may never call you. So yeah, I understand that completely.
That's why I spent the guys would oftentimes it was kind of a running joke for a little bit. Like I would eat catering with them and hang out with them, and everyone would say it was kind of like their last meal before I'd go out and kill them. But it was I wanted to spend time with them so they felt comfortable with me, because one, at that time too, you had people out there creating fake headlines saying I was hurting people and I never was hurting anybody. And it was, so the guys were coming in intimidated to begin with, and it was, I'm not going to hurt you guys. And I wanted them to actually meet me and talk to me and actually get to know me, and not something that somebody else wrote that has no idea about what's really going on. So, and they all came through, man. But it was on their end, it was extremely nervous. They're not on TV and I'm just getting started and whatnot. And it was, that's why I say it just all lined up perfectly, and everybody came through.
You now get to control your own narrative on the independent scene. After you left the E, we'll call it, did you lose any luster for the wrestling industry? Did you get to keep your love of wrestling?
It's a weird... I've never truly... I love wrestling. I've never liked the wrestling business, so to speak. But it was... I was hurt. And I've had 9 stem cell procedures, which I've talked about relentlessly since I've left, which that was the main reason why I left. And I always tell people to listen to the Why It Ended podcast with Robbie E, because it goes into enough detail on that where they can actually understand that. But I was physically hurt, and my back was my main issue. I had 4 discs, 5 discs that were severely compressed from doing that backpack stunner move and all the power lifting and picking guys up, catching guys off the top rope and all that stuff. When you catch guys out of the air, and when you're picking up Mark Henry and Big Show on a lot of live events, and then weight training and squatting and deadlifting. And then I was doing this backpack stunner, where I've always told anybody that the ass bumper, when you land on your ass in the wrestling ring, is the one bump that will hurt you more than anything. And if you could avoid it dropping a leg, anything, because the energy can only go one direction. It goes up your spine and it compresses your disc. And I was doing that backpack stunner with a guy on my back, you know, most nights. And since I was in my mid-20s, and because it was my finisher when I was Skip Sheffield, and it was starting to really suck. And I'd asked to let my contract run out, and then I was met negatively with that, and kind of threatened, and it didn't sit well, because I'd been there my whole life, essentially, and I've always put them on a pedestal up to that point. And when I left, there was a lot of things creative, and it was frustrated on many different levels. But I'd been frustrated from the beginning, and that was no secret. I just always dealt with it, always was a good soldier and busted my ass. But when your body starts to go, like my back was, I didn't know what was wrong either. It starts changing the way you view things, and, you know, waking up out of bed and falling to your knees. And it was like I had aged rapidly that last year, and it got worse when I left. And I've never thought highly of the wrestling business. I think there's so much room for it to evolve and grow, to catch up with the rest of the world on different things, which it's happening slowly, but it's still way behind. And but I love wrestling, and I always loved WWE, but it's been nice to be able to go and do the independents. But the main thing for me is just getting healthy. I'm about 85% healthy now, where I was told I was going to have 4 discs fused in my back and have to retire. And had I stayed there any longer, 6 months or a year, if I would have signed that 3-year deal, no doubt in my mind, I would have had to have my back fused in 4 spots, and I would not have been allowed to wrestle ever again. So it all worked out beautifully. But it was, I don't want to say, I I've been honest about different things that have happened in the past from my perspective and what I lived through and what I went through. And, you know, I've been involved in wrestling my entire adult life and with WWE the majority of that time. And it was to say things didn't anger me would be lying. And anger is a perfectly natural human emotion and things. But I feel like I've dealt with it very positively and done great things with that anger and whatnot. And it was a blessing in disguise getting out of there. So,
you know, you just said something that I rings true. I am lucky enough that I get to go to a lot of the Impact tapings because I tag along with my buddy PD Williams. And many times I'm an outsider. So we're in the car, we're driving back from Toronto, and I'm in the real world, the business world. And I go, what the heck is this? And why are they doing this? And it's like, there's these, you know, ancient protocols in, you know, that have not quite evolved, and you get heat for doing something that's perfectly normal in the real world. And it's so weird and walking on eggshells sometimes when you don't even have to.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the things, I don't let fear control me. I never have. And I always speak my mind. I tell it from my perspective. I try to always give an honest, straightforward opinion. And a lot of people can't handle that because it's wrestling industry is just weird in general at times. And some of it, but it's also great in different aspects. So, but it is sometimes the rules are ass backwards and there's just, it's the way it's just been, it's just slow to catch up with everything else.
James.
Yeah. So have you been like doing a lot of independent shows since you left WWE? I mean, I see your name here and there, or is it just something you do like, if the money's right, or does it have to be like the perfect situation for you to like go wrestle? Cause I do see you at some shows, but like me, I love to like perform and I love to, you know, travel and still love to do this. So I do as much as possible. Like, where's your head as far as that goes?
Yeah. So for me, and I actually heard Daniel Bryan on the Jericho podcast a while back was talking about, the love of wrestling and how guys leaving there and working for $4,000 or $5,000. And, you know, that's something for me and with my body, the way that it was for me, it's been simply a tool to go out and wrestle and stay sharp enough so that I'm not been out of the ring for 2 years, but I go and it's, I, that first year I left and first 2 years here, and it's still, I'm booked all the way to the end of the year. It's just some, oftentimes people, if it's, they think, cause you're not doing TV, that it doesn't exist or doesn't that. And I don't necessarily publicize it all that much. I don't, it's just one of the things I do to stay sharp. Cause for me, it's about getting, I left to get healthy and to get my body back right so that I can go back and achieve what I wanted to achieve at the highest level, wherever that may be when I decide to go back. And I've always said it'll probably be 2019 with the way everything's gone with the stem cells. But it, for me, it's just a way to go out and meet my fans and do appearances and wrestle and stay sharp and not be out of the ring for too long. But I've been using it as a tool. One, having my business and doing a podcast and doing these other things and my investing. It's a way I have income coming in from 4 or 5 different things. Mm-hmm. It is a tool for that for me, but to do it still and to allow my body ample time to recover from all the 9 stem cell procedures that I've had. So for me, it's been, the independent scene has been tremendous for me, since I've left, and I'm very, very grateful. I was able to leave with my name and keeping my brand is something a lot of guys aren't able to do. So I've been able to command a certain level, financially that I'm beyond thankful for that. Will that last forever? Probably not, but it's still going to this day because people still come out and whatnot, and my fans and, to the appearances that I do. But for me, it's about getting healthy. So it's not about, I didn't leave like Cody Rhodes left and to create buzz and to do other things. I left to get healthy and to start doing my business and do other things that I enjoy and give myself a time away because I was just, my body was broken down and I would have had to have retired. So it, for me, my reasons were completely different, and it's allowed me just a way to keep my in-ring skills and to stay out there and stay active. And I got another match coming up on the 25th here for Northeast Wrestling after just getting my 2 latest stem cell procedures, which I took a few weeks off. And then I got going to Asia September 9th for a big match over there. And then I'm booked from the end of September all the way to December every weekend, pretty much. So, but again, it's, people don't necessarily see it. It's not, or it's not for, they think because it's, if it's not for what they perceive as a major promotion, right, even though I'm making five times as much as anybody else. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not looking at it from that aspect, and it's a business at the end of the day. And I think that's one of the things, unfortunately, that's gone out the window with today's wrestlers. Like, we're all fans. I was as big of a fan as anybody growing up. But when you decide to get into it, it then turns into a business. And when you have a bunch of boys that jump into the business that don't treat it like that, they get taken advantage of. And that's what's happening more and more now. And you got it, but it comes with experience. And you have to know how to treat it like a business, because if you don't, it will eat you up and spit you out. And anybody who's ever had any success at this treats it like a business, because that's what it is. And the love, and it doesn't change the love for the wrestling or anything of that nature. But I've been extremely thankful for the way everything's worked out since I've left.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like you were saying, you got to treat it like a business. When, you know, I get booking inquiries all the time, and I never, you know, switch the price. And I always, you know, stand my ground with that, because like you said, you got to. I mean, that's the most important thing. This is how I make a living. Like, I'm very lucky and fortunate for me. Like, I'm in and out of WWE. I just had another couple of month run with them, so that helps on the independents.
Right. Keeping
your price the same. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If more people, I wish more people would treat it like that, and you know, maybe more people would be making four figures a match.
Yeah, and again, and here's in the argument. So people say they could say, if they come at you in a negative way with that, well, guess what? The promoter is making money, and if they're making more money because you're coming in, you're allowed to command a certain level of money. And it's because you are making them a certain level of money. And it's just that is the business side of it. And it's, there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Cause if you don't, everyone would want you to come work for free so they can make more money off you.
Absolutely.
So you have to have respect for yourself, because no one else will.
You said that you've been a wrestling fan all of your life. How has your wrestling techniques changed as you have, grown older, repaired yourself from injury? Who did you base yourself after early? And now who do you kind of, mirror towards? Flattery is the best form of compliments.
No, so since I've left, I've cut back on the power moves that I was doing, things like the gorilla press or catching guys, you know, off the ropes, where if they're jumping off the second or top rope, because when you catch them, it's compressing your disc in your back, and every little thing. I stopped doing things that was compressing my spine, and I've been able to work and do matches and go and do main event matches and put in time at these different independent shows still. And whatnot, but just work smarter and not do things that's hurting my body. You know, like my meat hook clothesline I'm doing with my left arm now, just because my right arm, I've had six stem cell procedures on my right shoulder, and I'm trying to regrow cartilage in it that was from cortisone shots I got eaten away. And just doing little things right now that you think are so important, like where, you know, if a guy jumps off the top rope, I would usually catch him, and then just to show the strength of catching him, then I would set him down and then hit him with an overhead belly to belly suplex. Instead, now I'll let him actually just hit his feet on the ground as I make the illusion of catching him. Same exact thing. It's the same exact response, but I'm not actually tearing my body down, catching him out of midair. Things like that. And in just, I've always taken pride. Like And I've always talked about this, is I feel like sometimes there's a certain portion of the quote-unquote fans that don't respect all the different styles, and they think that high-flying makes you a great wrestler. High-flying doesn't make you a great wrestler. It makes you great at doing high-flying moves, but it's just one part of the business, and there's all these different aspects, and I am primarily a power-based wrestler, but I like doing other things too. I don't have to. And people, they don't want to see you do that because it doesn't necessarily look right. And so I always just try to be entertaining while being physical. And for me, pro wrestling is the illusion of a real fight. And I feel like when I'm out there, and one of the reasons for the success I've had is it looks like I'm really killing people. And that is an art. And to do that and not actually kill people, because we shouldn't do that. But going out there and just and being physical, man, and guys like Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit, and those guys, Dean Malenko and Fit Finlay, they were so intense with every little thing that they did. And I try to bring that aspect into everything that I do and whatnot. And, you know, and on the independent shows, I'll occasionally bust out a house show dive and a suicide dive. every once in a while towards the end of a match, if it can make sense. If it doesn't make sense, I don't do it. I don't have to. But it's just working smarter oftentimes and not doing the stupid things that I was doing on a night in, night out basis because I thought I had to prove myself every night, where you have to work smart and you got to look at the end game. And longevity is a big part of being successful in pro wrestling. And that's something I'm looking at now in a different way than I used to.
As we wrap this up, James, I've got one more question. I don't know if you have anything else for Ryback.
Oh, man, it was just great talking to you. I met you, like, once or twice. Like, we were in Philly together at a signing a couple of years ago at the ECW Arena. But, yeah, it was great chatting with you, and hopefully I get to see you soon and really get to know you a little bit. You sound like you're very intelligent about the business, and that, you know, I love talking to guys and picking guys' brains that have been around, and you just seem like you have a good mind for it, and I appreciate that.
No, thank you. Yeah, and I'm sure we're going to run into each other many more times here. So it's a small world out there in the wrestling world.
Finally, absolutely.
Finally, my last question is a little bit promotion, a little bit of a question. We all grew up in the age where you look back at some of these wrestlers and they've fallen on hard times. You've mentioned earlier you have at least five streams plus of different incomes coming in. How important was that for you to solidify outside the wrestling industry? And at what point in your career did you realize maybe this money's not going to last forever?
Yeah, that's one of the unfortunate things about pro wrestling. And that's just one of the things on the business. And wrestlers don't make nearly as much as they should. And it's not meant to be negative, to be angry. It's a very real situation that you have, you know. And I respect what Vince has been able to do, but when you have a guy that has become a billionaire off of other human lives, and you look at the history of the business, and pro wrestlers typically die much younger than every other profession, something doesn't add up, and it's not right. And that's partially the wrestler's fault too. And it's definitely the wrestler's fault as well. But it's a very tough business. And part of that is in it being away and on the road all the time. And I strive for balance in my life. And that was one of the things I'm really thankful for being able to get out of there, because I was completely caught up in that bubble and living on the road 5 days a week, being gone for weeks at a time. And it changes you. Every single guy that's there that I came into the business with from Florida Championship Wrestling or Deep South Wrestling or Ohio Valley Wrestling, they are completely different people now than they were when they first got into the business, as am I, because it changes you. And it's not necessarily in a good way. It hardens you on different aspects, but it's not for the faint. And that's where I look at it, where when I left and I talked about the pay structure for wrestling, it wasn't that everybody should get paid an equal amount. That was raising a question for people to look at the pay structure on this and be like, wait a second, that isn't right. These guys are on the road the same amount of time. They're doing essentially the same amount of work. They're not making this on merchandise, but then they're being used they're playing their role to perfection, but they're being asked to lose, but they're making millions less than these guys. There's something off about that. That's the question. That's what, and for outsiders to even critique that blew me away, because everybody inside the business respected it, because it's bringing up a valid point. And that's when you see guys that leave there and they don't have anything shortly after, it sucks. And it's heartbreaking to see that. And for me, I noticed my first year, I was, you know, very thankful to make a very good amount my first year and a couple of different points after that. But I saw pretty quickly that the money was going to fluctuate based on how they were going to use you and use me and then taking away merchandise and things that were bringing in a lot of money for me that I had no say on. And that's when I started riding by myself, not to seclude myself, to be a loner or anything of that nature. But one, because we're around each other all day, but it is good to take some alone time. But it was for me to read and listen to audiobooks on the car rides and give myself a free education on business and other successful people and learning, okay, I'm going to have this amount of money coming in or a certain level of money for, you know, the foreseeable future. You got to be able to do something with it. And I'll never forget one of my banker sitting with them and they go, why do you have all this money just sitting in this account, not doing anything? And I was scared to death. And I said, because I'm scared and I don't know what to do with it. And that's right then when I said those words, I got fucking angry because I was like, I don't like fear to control anything that I do. And so rather than trust other people with my money, I just started learning about it and listening to book after book after book on stocks, on real estate, different forms of investing and taking calculated risk so that essentially you're making money when you sleep. And it was the smartest thing I ever did. And I'm still to this day, I go through a book or two a week, sometimes three, and I'm just constantly absorbing information, trying to better myself because it's a never ending game. And like wrestling is unfortunately the tough business. And there's a select group of guys that do really, really well for it. And even then they don't do nearly as well as they should. In my opinion on that. And then you have a whole lot of other guys that dedicate a lot of time. They sacrifice their health, you know, in those medical bills. I could speak to this too, like leaving WWE. I just actually interviewed PJ Black on my podcast here this past week. You know, he lost everything. He broke his ankles in a skydiving accident and he had to pay for satellites. He had to pay for his medical care. And you know, he did all right in WWE. He'd been there for a bit and made a good amount of money. He lost everything and he had to completely start over. And I couldn't, he's in such a good place now. And he's somebody I truly consider a friend. And it's heartbreaking to see that, you know, guys lose anything. And it's happened to so many of us in this business. It's like enough is enough. And for me, it was just trying to have more control because it could honestly happen to anybody. You know, something bad could happen to me tomorrow and medical bills, they're no joke. And that stuff and the money that you do earn there, it's not enough. It can be gone. It's not like you're not making millions and millions and millions of dollars like these other sports, with the exception of a couple people typically. And even then, it's nothing compared to these other things. And that money goes so quick when you factor it all in. So yeah, for me, it was just trying to be smart and be able to make money without my body. And luckily I did learn that, because when my body gave out on me and I needed to take a break, I've been able to do other things and have money coming in and whatnot. So it's not easy, man. It's heartbreaking to see, and seeing old timers and guys wrestling when they shouldn't be wrestling anymore. Like, I don't want to be that. I just don't. And it scares me and seeing that. And unfortunately it's a very real part of the business. And you know, hopefully as we continue to evolve and grow, and pro wrestling will as well, and we don't see that nearly as often going forward.
You can find more with Ryback at the Conversation with the Big Guy, his podcast that releases every Monday. Feedmemore.com, I believe, right? That's where you're sending people?
Yeah, that's where my Feed Me More Nutrition all-natural supplement line on feedmemore.com. I got my book, Wake Up, It's Feeding Time, available on Amazon, and then the podcast Conversation with the Big Guy on Stitcher and iTunes.
So Twitter, where can people follow you? You have like a million followers, so like everybody on Twitter's already following you.
Yeah, the Twitter's pretty much just to promote. I that's my least favorite social media, that and Facebook. I'm never on. The at Ryback22 on Twitter. I'm actually, there's at CWTBG and at FMM Nutrition on Twitter, and at The Big Guy Ryback22 on Instagram. That can kind of direct you to the other ones, that The Big Guy Ryback22 on Instagram. So,
James, why don't you send them home?
Hey, Ryback, appreciate having you on. Like I said, great conversation. I'm glad you're doing so well. I'm glad you've, you know, like went to other places to, you know, like you said, you learned how to make a living outside of wrestling, and you gave yourself a free education on those car rides. And, you know, being a guy that did a lot of those car rides, that's cool that you found a way to use that, you know, that time to just learn. And that's very cool. And it was great having you on the Dougcast, and I hope to see you soon and catch up with you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. We're doing guests now on Conversation with the Big Guys. So maybe one of these days we can grab you for an interview on the swap it over. So
absolutely. Hit me up whenever you need me.
You got it. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you. James, man, I really appreciate you reaching out to Ryback and getting him on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the one thing about Ryback that I don't think a lot of people bring up, he had that Hell in a Cell match with CM Punk. You know, if you go back and look at that, they pulled a hell of a pay-per-view buy for that match. Like, a lot of people bought that pay-per-view, him and Punk. Like, people looked that up. That was before, you know, the WWE network, like, was streaming the pay-per-views. You know, it was still, you had to get it on pay-per-view. And think, yeah, it was him and Punk and Hell in a Cell that did a really good buy rate.
You know, you and I, before we actually started recording, we both said, hey, listen, let's not really get into his WWE stuff. It's just something that everybody always talks about. And we just wanted to take this in a little bit different of a direction to figure out who the guy Ryback really is, not what he has done.
Yeah, I don't know him too well. He seems like a nice guy. I met him a handful of times. He's always nice to me. But, yeah, he seems like an intelligent guy, like, when it comes to stuff outside of wrestling and the way he's, you know, he's doing his nutrition. And, you know, he likes to listen to, like, you know, those books that come out on cassette or what have you, and, like, learn about financing. And he just seems like a bright guy, and he seems like he's doing well. Good for him. I'm so positive about people, and I like hearing that people do good, and good for him for, you know, taking his life outside of WWE and doing something very good with it.
In the realm of It's a Small World After All, I have a story from this weekend to tell you, James. I was up in Toronto for this set of Impact tapings with Petey, as we had said during the Ryback interview. I was asked to play a bartender in a skit with a Stone Rockwell, who's doing a bunch of videos online, part of their Twitch. He's doing videos for the website. It's going to be everywhere. Comes to me and says, hey, you got a clean shirt. We need a bartender. I'm like, oh, that's exciting. So we get there, and it's me and another guy. And I feel horrible that I don't remember his name. And if he ever listens to this, I apologize. I am so sorry. But they go off to film something, and he's kind of on his phone. I'm on mine. I try to do the small talk. Very nice guy. And I go, oh, yeah, I do a podcast with PD. He's like, oh, cool. I said, I also do one with James Ellsworth. He goes, really? I go, yeah. He goes, I just wrestled him like Saturday night. I go, really? He's like, big time wrestling. Oh, man, it's a funny story. You know, he puts me in the headlock, and I feel this shooting pain, and I realize I forgot to take my earrings off. And I thought they got ripped out in the middle of the wrestling match.
Yeah, he was a little concerned about that, but obviously I been wrestling 16 years, I've never hurt anybody, so he wasn't hurt. But, you know, like, when you do have earrings in, because I've left them in before and wrestled, it's a certain uncomfort when somebody does have you in something like a headlock and your earrings just pressed against your ear there. And so he probably felt a little uncomfortable because he forgot to take them out. He had these big earrings. Seemed like a nice guy. Had a lot of fun there at Big Time Wrestling, as I always do. It's a very good independent wrestling company. If you haven't checked them out, btwtickets.com is their website. They run great shows, like 30 to 40 shows a year. And they're just, you know, Steve Perkins and Terry Allen, great guys that run that promotion.
So, James, as we wrap up this podcast, we're keeping it short today. We're not going to hit the 45-minute mark, but let's just talk about a little bit of what we got going on here at the WrestlingPerspectivePodcast.com. You started something last week. If you go over to ProWrestlingTees.com/Ellsworth, and part of that was my fault when I put it up there. I forgot the S in Pro Wrestling Tees. But if you go to Pro Wrestling Tees.
Moron.
I know. Listen, that's not the first time I heard those words this weekend. ProWrestlingTees.com/Ellsworth. You go buy a shirt. I have my DMs open on Twitter. You can go to WrestlingPerspective@gmail.com or WrestlingPerspectivePodcast.com and leave a message. If you send a picture of your order, I will help set it up and have James Ellsworth call you personally to thank you, James.
Absolutely. I got people bought some shirts this week. They're doing real well at the shows. Like, I bring a batch to all my independent wrestling shows, and people love them and are doing videos with me that I have up on my James Ellsworth Wrestling Instagram. And we're going to try to get me back with SmackDown Live with the Rehire Ellsworth hashtag and t-shirts to let Paige and everyone in charge there at WWE know that you want James Ellsworth back on SmackDown Live. Duh.
You know what? Can I just say something? This seemed like this SmackDown, as we recorded it immediately after, this was a very James Ellsworth-heavy episode of SmackDown, where they talked about you a lot during this episode. You were part of a promo package for a second during the Carmella interview, where she was part of the announcing team for the Charlotte Flair versus Becky Lynch match. it seemed like it was very James Ellsworth heavy, which is a lot different from your last run where it seemed like they kind of cut you out of everything.
Well, man, the James Ellsworth character is so fun, right? And I think WWE is aware of that. It's just a fun character that, man, you never know when he's going to show up. You never know what he's going to do. You never know where he's going to be. And trust me, I have no clue either. I have nothing to tell you guys as far as what my future there is, because I have no clue. But I think I do have a good relationship with WWE. I've always done everything they've asked me to do. I absolutely love being a part of SmackDown Live, part of WWE in general. It's always going to be that way. And a lot of people say, oh, man, he's a homer. He doesn't talk bad about WWE. Why would I? They gave me my dream. They gave me opportunity of a lifetime. And I promise you that I'm going to continue to fight and continue to do independent shows and continue to, like, keep moving forward and continue to try to get shots at WWE and be there, because I love it so much. I love performing there. And trust me, like, when they mention my name on TV, like you just touched on, like they did a lot tonight on SmackDown Live, that means a lot to me. That means they're still thinking about me, and I truly appreciate that. And I hope, hopefully, you know, we'll see me back on SmackDown Live or in WWE in any aspect, whether it be Raw or 205 or whatever. Hopefully, we see me back there soon. And that's what the hashtag Rehire Ellsworth is all about.
I would love to see you there by September 4th. SmackDown's coming here to Detroit. I would love to do a live podcast with you someday. I know
maybe
you will.
The September 11th SmackDown, hopefully. Anyway, yeah, Rehire Ellsworth, hashtag Rehire Ellsworth. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/Ellsworth and get the t-shirt.
I'm sorry, that was great. Good one. James, it's been a fun week. Thanks for still doing this yet again. Thank you to Ryback who came on, and hopefully to at least, I'd say, 200,000 of his 1.5 million fans that will probably start downloading this podcast now.
Hopefully, yeah. It's Twitter, back when he really, like, you know, when he was in WWE, a lot of people, I feel like more than now, start following people on Twitter. Like, Twitter, like, more people seem to be on Instagram now. Like, I have way more followers on Instagram than I do on Twitter. But my Twitter did get hacked about a year ago, and I lost all my followers and had to start over. But, like, I think Instagram's, like, the big thing now. James Ellsworth Wrestling on Instagram for you guys listening out there. But real quick before we go, I'll be in California this weekend. I love California. I'm going back to Cali. I'm going to Stockton, to the Stockton Con out there. You can meet me out there Saturday and Sunday. Or Friday, you can see me at APW. Like, and all that information, again, on at Real Ellsworth on Twitter or James Ellsworth Wrestling on Instagram. I'll be in Cali this weekend, and you never know where I'll show up. And that's the cool thing about James Ellsworth. You just never know where he'll pop up.
James, it's the Dudcast for this week. You only called me an idiot four times, so it's a successful podcast.
Yeah, it was like pretty much what, once every 10 minutes. What my normal is, I think I timed it out once every 6 minutes, so it's down this week.
I'm excited.
I'll fix that next week.
James, have a good week. We'll see you next week.
All right, Dennis. Take care, bud.